plate a potential nugget.
Atul, picking up from one of the things you said, finding your voice. You know, you spoke about some of the comedians telling you that you have a unique voice. And this phrase comes up in the stand-up world. But I'm curious about the term in general. What does that term mean in the stand-up world? And talk to us a little bit about finding your own voice in this space.
So, you know, obviously the stand-up, first of all, means that you're standing up for an opinion, for a views, you know, standing up for a cause. I think that stand-up comes more from that, number one. And what has happened, I think, in the few years, all over the world, you know, comedians are making better sense than most of the politicians, you know, because honestly, because we have a voice, we have a platform. And because any country, like today in India, politics is a very, very big thing. You know, today, I think in terms of a topic, and especially since 2014, but it has really become... It has become the talk of the town. I mean, you can't get on stage without making some political reference at least, you know. Mm-hmm. And audiences like that because also as an audience, we are very, very politically aware. You know, we have opinions, we have this, and thanks to WhatsApp and things like that, you know, everybody is getting news, so much, you know, political news. Even, you know, earlier politics was only restricted to people who read newspapers, you know. But today now children who don't read newspaper, they are getting on their WhatsApp, they are getting on their social media, they are looking at memes and things like that. So I think it's very, very important for comedians to have a voice, to raise a voice and to talk about topics, you know, their opinion. It's their opinion. Obviously, it's not the final word. It's, you know, it's their opinion again, your opinion, but their opinion on what they feel. And I think that is very, very important because you'll see comedians around the world, you know, especially in the US, in the UK, and even in India, you know. I always say that, you know, and now I'm getting slightly political here, but, you know, in the absence of a clear majority, it becomes a responsibility of everybody, the media, poets, authors, comedians, and, you know, even people, you know, as a society, you know, should question everything. You should not just take it, you know, as it comes, you know, at least question it, you know. Because otherwise, somebody will have a free run. And you don't want somebody to have a free run under sea and take your country for a ride. Because we all know what politicians do. You know, it's not, you know, it's not that everybody is good or everybody is bad. So I think it becomes very, very important for comedians also to have an opinion on whatever, you know, subject they are comfortable talking about. It's not that you have to talk about politics, you have to talk about Bollywood. Like, you know, I don't do some of the jokes because I don't relate to it, you know. For example, I mean... I'm not, I may not, you know, like those jokes. I mean, it's my own individual thing, you know. So, but yeah, I think it's important for comedians to have a voice for sure.
And I guess I'm also linking it back to the point you made earlier where you said the average age of the industry in terms of performers is probably, you know, people are probably 15, 20 years younger to you.
Yeah.
So did that mean that you had to be a little more thoughtful about who your target segment is? Or is that something that evolved naturally depending on the material you had?
No, that actually evolved naturally. So honestly, whenever you write jokes, and that I think for many comedians, like if you you have to write what you find funny, what you find comfortable, what you have an opinion on. You just can't write because the audiences are liking it, you know. For example, last as 2 years, the biggest rise in comedy in terms of, you know, in terms of volume, in terms of money, has been Hindi stand-up comedy, you know. Same kind of genre of, like, you know, satire comedy, but done in Hindi because of Jio. And, you know, now, and I know there were sort of comedians initially who used to do in English but now have switched purposely to Hindi because they feel they can ride on that. But it doesn't come naturally to it, because if you're not from, if you're at home, you're speaking English. If you're, you know, your parents speak English to you, speak to your children in English, and suddenly you switch to a different character and start doing Hindi, and, you know, you don't know half the words, you don't know half their meanings, and you start doing Hindi comedy just because it's a trend, that's ridiculous, you know. So you have to find your voice in terms of what suits you. What suits your personality? What suits your age? Not really age. It's not that I'm not saying that a 19-year-old guy cannot or a 24-year-old guy can't talk about politics. No, nothing. Today's kids are so smart enough, and we have a lot of these young comedians who have great political opinions, you know, and jokes on it. So I think finally it's a question of, you know, finding your voice, finding what your comfort level is. And also I think I always tell a lot of the younger comedians, you know, don't go for what the audience likes. Go for what you like, what your voice is. And that's audience will automatically, you will find your audience. You know, you'll find your niche audience, your, you know, people who like you. And as far as me, I don't really say, okay, this I should write because I should get a younger audience. But for some reason, I have a lot of young audience. I think 70% of my audience is below the age of 24 or 25. The reason is, I don't know, I think they look at this is how my dad should be, you know. Because I used to get this, you know, you're so cool, we want my dad to be like you. So that's where that came in, because the kind of topics which I talk about are fairly, you know, I would say cool, as what these young kids call it, you know. So, and what happens with me, what happens when I'm dealing with a joke, the kids are listening to it from a parent's perspective, and when I, you know, from their perspective, when I deliver a joke, the parents are interpreting it from their perspective. So sometimes it works both ways.
This notion of finding your voice is quite a profound point that Atul makes, that shows up in different ways in the context of what we do in our life and the products and services that we offer to the people around us. Here's another take on the same topic from Amish Tripathi, who transitioned from the world of financial services after a degree in IMC to becoming a writer. When I asked him about how he thought about tailoring his writing to his audiences, this is what he said.
No, yeah, it was just for me. I wasn't really... Look, I was a banker, man. I mean, no one wants to listen to bankers, let's be honest. And a banker, you know, going with a philosophical thesis on what is evil, they'll say, yeah, you bankers are evil. I was just writing for myself and for my family, that's it.
And this was in addition to your day job as a banker?
Addition to my day job. And of course, slowly that thesis got converted into an action-adventure book. The idea being that through a hopefully engaging story, I'll communicate at the root of it is the philosophy of what is evil. And I'm trying to communicate that through this adventure, through this story. And that's how it panned out.
From writing for yourself to writing a book that gets published, what was that journey like?
You know, when I write, I don't really care. Even now, when I write, I'm not really thinking about how it will be received by readers, critics, publishers, or anyone else, frankly. Uh-huh. This is how I wrote my first book, and this is how I write today as well. I can't say it was a conscious choice when I was writing my first book, because I wasn't even really thinking that it would get published. I guess without realizing it, I was following what Lord Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, Karmanya Vadikaraste Ma Faleshu Kadachana, that you have a right to your karma, not to the fruits of your karma. And we in the modern world have interpreted this wonderful philosophy to mean something fatalistic, which is not what Lord Krishna was telling us. What he was telling us is actually, if you're detached from the results of your karma, if you're detached from success or failure, then actually you're unstoppable. If you're doing something simply because you love doing it, simply because you enjoy your karma so much, who can stop you? Because failure can of course be demotivating, because it feels, you know, sadness, grief, sure, demotivation in your heart, and it stops you.
Sure.
But success can be as dangerous. Because you'll find so many people who are one-hit wonders because success fills pride in their head and they lose their way. But if you're detached from success or failure, then actually you're unstoppable, because you'll just keep doing what you love doing. And I'm not saying I'm this great philosopher and I consciously figured this out. It's just that I loved doing anything with my book so much that I genuinely didn't care whether it succeeded or not. I wasn't really thinking whether it would get published or not. I just love doing anything associated with my books.
The other perspective about being authentic is from Sudhir Sitapati, the author of The CEO Factory. He talks about how brands have to stay authentic to what they stand for.
One of the things that great brands have is that people who love the brand and people who hate the brand must say the same thing about it. That is the mark of a true outstanding brand. So you may not like the things that people who like it, people who hate it may not like the same things, but they say the same thing. So a brand, as I've written in the book, is...
Give me an example here, sorry, just for me to get a sense of what you're saying.
So, you know, let's say, let's take a strong brand that I worked on, let's say Lifebuoy. People who love it will say it's got the strong smell, which is really sort of disinfectant, and you know, I love it. It makes me feel really clean and hygienic. And guys who hate it will say it's this strong smell and it's disinfectant, and I really feel like I'm in a hospital.
They'll align on the attribute.
They will align on the attribute. So they will say the same things about it, but they may like it or they may not like it, right? So that's the characteristic of really, really powerful. It's a good way to judge brands, and I suspect that's the same about personal brands as well. You cannot be different things to different people. That's the principle of branding. You have to be the same thing to everybody, whether they like you or not. And therefore, you know, you got to choose those few attributes or those few associations you want to own. Close your eyes, whether it's a personal brand or a real brand, you'll be able to identify people in 3-4 words. Then they're strong brands. They have to be authentic. They have to be true also to their, you know, one of the things I do a lot when I do brand work, DJ, is we do something called brand archaeology, which is go into the deep history, and many of our brands are very old, the deep history of the brand, the founder, and what was the vision with which it was founded, and what was that sort of birthing qualities of the brand, because they tend to be the true qualities of a brand that, you know, 70, 80, 100 years later, and you've got to kind of rediscover it. And I think that's the truth about personal brands. I'm not an expert, as I tell you, but as I'm talking about it, I guess you've just got to go within. You can't game it and say, what will that person like and what will this person like and how can I be? You got to understand what it is that you are. And whatever it is that you are, if you are true to it, people end up liking you. I mean, so, you know, I think that, and that's true about brands. You know, the sharper they are, you'll always have people respecting you.
I like the point Sudhir makes about studying the brand archaeology and staying true to it. In the work I do, I find it helpful to understand an individual through their journey and understand their archaeology. Just like Sudhir talks about the birthing qualities of the brand, I find that staying true to our past and our history can often provide us a useful perspective in the way we make choices. Bob Keegan, who's done a lot of work in adult development, talks about the transition from a socialized mind to a self-authoring mind. When we do that, it's helpful for us to understand our core and stay true to it. If this topic is of interest, tune into my conversation with Jennifer Gavi Berger and an earlier guest, where we talk about some of these transition points. If you like this topic, you might also like the playlist Authenticity in the curated playlist section at playtopotential.com.